Growing up in northern Italy, in a fairly rural area, I remember that practically everyone had a vineyard. My father had a very small one, but my great uncle had a huge vineyard, and he would call me to help at harvest time. And once, I have the vivid memory also of being placed barefoot in the vat to stomp over the grapes to produce the wine, because he had a wine press, but for the wine that he would keep at home, he wanted it done the old traditional way, by stomping on it. I still remember that. People loved their vineyard because they loved their wine. You might laugh at this, but you know, I grew up in a culture where, as a child, I remember my grandma pouring a little bit of wine in my water and saying to me, "Drink it, it's good for your blood." I was craving for Coca-Cola when I turned 18, that's what I did. So people loved their vineyards. They treated it really as a loved one. I remember seeing a man cry one day after a hailstorm ruined his vineyard. And also I remember when I was assigned my first assignment as a priest in Canada, in Ontario. It was a parish of Italian immigrants. And most of them would buy California grapes and produce homemade wine. And always one of those bottles made its way to the rectory. So I remember that very vividly. In the Old Testament, in that Mediterranean culture, the vineyard became really a powerful symbol of God's blessings. So much so that in the book of the prophet Micah, chapter 4, verse 4, there's a description of the life truly blessed, the life filled with God's blessing. And it says, in those days, the days of blessing, every man will sit under his vine. That's the description of heaven in the Old Testament. A man sitting under his vine, enjoying the fruit of his vine. So now, you understand why in the first reading you hear of a song for a wine, for a vineyard. I mean, have you ever heard someone composing a song for a plant? Well, that's what Isaiah speaks about in today's first reading. He says, "Let me tell you of my friend's song for his vineyard." He was so much in love with his vineyard that he composed a love song, in which he recounts all that he did for his vineyard, how he chose the best fertile ground, spaded it, cleared it, chose the best vines, planted them, took care of them. He expected for them to produce good fruit, good grapes, and with that, to make good wine. Wine was the main ingredient of any celebration, any feast. Remember the wedding in Cana in Galilee when the wine was beginning to fail? The feast was over. And so this man, this prophet Isaiah, sings of his friend's love for a vineyard. Who's that friend of Isaiah? He's God. He's the one that took care of the vine, of the vineyards. He's the one that planted it with all care. And who is that vineyard but the people of Israel, but humanity, but us? God is the owner of the world, the owner of creation. He's the maker of our very life. And what's his purpose? That we produce good fruit. A fruit that will give us joy. The intoxicating exhilarating joy of a celebration with wine. But we are told that he was disappointed. Instead of producing good grapes, the vineyard produced wild grapes, sour grapes, good for nothing. Why? Why did this happen? Isaiah does not give an answer. We find an answer, though, in the gospel. Jesus returns to that image of the vineyard and addresses a parable to the scribes, to the Pharisees, to the chief priests, the religious establishment, those who thought they owned the people of God. They were in charge. And this is exactly the attitude why the vineyard is not producing good fruit. And Jesus introduces in this parable the figure of the tenants. He says, God has planted that vineyard, but he has given it, leased it out to tenants. We are the tenants, you scribes and Pharisees. Each one of us is entrusted with God's creation, with this world, with our very life. It's not ours. It was given to us. It's a gift. But we are stewards of the gifts of God. However, the chief priests, the elders, and we too fall into the same temptation of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve received everything as a gift, but they wanted to grasp, to usurp, to take over, to become the owners. It was not enough for them to enjoy the gifts God has given. They wanted to use them and live their lives according to their own whims. And that's what we do. That's exactly, by definition, what secularism is. Friedrich Nietzsche, the famous German philosopher who is at the root of modern-day atheism, he said, we need to kill God so that humanity will own the world. As long as there is a God, we will not grow up, he said, to own our very lives. This is the beginning, the root of secularism. Beginning that God is somehow our adversary. He's our competition. And therefore we need to get rid of him if we want to live our life. And so the tenants, that's what they do. They plan to take over, to steal the vineyard. We plan to do the same. We plan to live our lives according to our own whims and purposes, not according to God's purpose. Remember that best-selling book by Pastor Rich Warren, The Purpose-Driven Life? The point it makes is exactly this. You want to find your life? You want to find happiness? You want to find the rich, good wine that will make of your life a celebration? Live for God's purposes, not your own. If you think you own your life, you will lose it. You will spoil it. The moment, instead, you live it according to God's will, you will find it. We are all tempted to live our life according to our own desires. It's mine, I do with it what I want. I am the owner of my life, the owner of my time on earth. I am the owner of the universe. Everything that we think we own, we destroy. Look at the state of the environment, pollution everywhere. Look at the state of humanity. Look at the state of our lives. What we think we own, we ruin. Instead, if we maintain that God is the owner of our life, he will not take away anything from us. You see, in the parable, God sends his servants at harvest time. But you know, servants do not come to take away the joy. I remember Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI at the inauguration mass of his pontificate in 2005. The very first homily, he said, if you open your heart to God, he will not take away anything. Anything that makes life beautiful and worth living, he will give you everything. So God is not there to take away, to steal the produce from us, to steal the joy of life, quite the opposite. But the people of Israel rejected those servants, and we do too. We reject the people and situation and circumstances that could open our eyes to God's purposes. We think we know best. And so God had no other choice but to send also his Son. And as the Gospel of John says, he sent his Son into the world not to condemn, but to give life, to save, not to take away the joy. Jesus Christ did not come as a party pooper or a joy kill. He came that we may have life and have it abundantly. That this great celebration that is symbolized by the vineyard, by the wine, may indeed happen in our life. You know, last year I celebrated my 25th anniversary of priesthood, and I went home for a long time, you might remember. And so I was able to spend some time with my friend, Father Gianni. We went touring around Italy. I went to visit Tuscany, Cinque Terre. I went to Venice, and I went to Valpolicella. Valpolicella, it's a valley not too far from where my family lives. And it's famous, well-known, because of the wines that are produced there. Amarone, Ripasso, and also Prosecco. Those are the wines produced there. Well, it was my first time in Valpolicella. I was completely flabbergasted. So beautiful. Hill after hill, covered, absolutely covered with manicured vineyards. Not a leaf out of place. And now imagine that at the forefront of this, at the head of each row of vines, the farmers planted bushes of roses, red roses. So picture for a moment the scene. Long rows of vines up and down the slopes, and in the forefront, roses. I learned later that those roses are not planted there just because they look good. Roses are very susceptible to diseases and parasites. So a farmer will know immediately if the vines are in danger when the roses begin to show symptoms of disease. I believe that the symptoms are obvious, that something is not right. So it's time we do something about it. It's time we believe that if we live according to God's purposes, if we acknowledge that our life is not ours, that this world is not ours, this time is not ours, that we are just stewards, tenants, if we live according to God's purposes, we will find true joy. And what are God's purposes? Paul tells us in today's second reading. He says, whatever is just and true, whatever is worth living for, whatever is honorable, these are the virtues that we need to strive for. God's purpose is to make of our life a celebration of joy. When we doubt him, we instead make of our life an elegy, a song of grief. Let us trust the Lord. Let us make him, acknowledge him as the owner of our life. Let us be stewards of God's gifts and graces. Amen.